state of Pennsylvania is now pushing to restore the death sentence for Mumia Abu-Jamal has been overturned. On June 29th, the Federal Court of Appeals lifted a stay on Mumia's appeal process, and the case could now suddenly be moving ahead and under more unfavorable circumstances. Now, to back up a minute, the stay, there was two stays in this case. One was regarding the proceedings, which were put on hold until, I believe they were put on hold until there's some of the more of the other appeals were done. That stay has been lifted. The stay of execution has not been lifted. That's still pending in a final ruling on whether Judge John really did overturn the death sentence or not. And part of the concern here is that the June 29th, I don't believe it was a June 29th ruling. It was, let's see here. Let's look at the Refuse and Resist article to back me up here. Okay, it was a decision called Beard versus Banks. They say it was a reaction in a 5-4 decision by a bitterly divided court. The majority opinion was written by Clarence Thomas. The issue was whether a previous decision by the Supreme Court, known as the Mills case, had established a new rule of constitutional law, and if so, could it be applied retroactively, that is, the death penalty cases that were concluded before the new rule went into effect. The Mills case dealt with how juries should be considered mitigating circumstances when imposing the death sentence. What is so ugly and racist about all this is that the issue, Beard versus Banks, is whether the people on death row who are principally black and Latino will be executed or not, not on the basis of justice, but solely on the basis of whether their appeals were concluded before or after the Mills decision came down. In the Beard versus Banks decision, the Supreme Court held that the Mills rule could not be applied retroactively. That goes against, in my own comments, that goes against the primary purpose of the Supreme Court, which is to establish new laws and actually apply things retroactively so that people who are appealing their convictions can have new precedents set for them to have themselves exonerated based on new precedents. I mean, if they don't allow retroactive application, how are they ever going to have new precedents for new people? I don't understand that. But anyway, in the Beard versus Banks decision, the Supreme Court held that the Mills rule could not be applied retroactively. That is, people who might have been spared the death penalty because of trials violated the Mills rule will now face execution solely because their appeals were concluded before a certain date, which I believe was 1988. Well, those whose cases were concluded after that date will have a chance at being spared. This is what passes for justice under this system. The important point here is that Mumia's death penalty was overturned precisely because his sentencing violated Mills' rule, although there are other issues besides this involved in his appeal. Both sides have been ordered to turn in legal briefs on how Beard decision affects Mumia's case by July 29th. The state of Pennsylvania will argue that the date in Mumia's case did not make the cut and that his death penalty should be reinstated. While Mumia's attorney will show that this is not the case, facts have not carried much weight in the face of the state's determined effort to execute Mumia. This is why determined political action is crucial. At this critical moment, Refuse and Resist urges youth from around the country to join us in Philadelphia from July 23rd to 26th for the 10th annual Philly Freedom Summer to take part in building the movement to stop the execution, overturn the conviction, and free Mumia Abu-Jamal. PFS was initiated by Refuse and Resist in 1995 when Mumia came within days of being executed. Each year since then, PFS brings youth together with the people of Philly for outreach, actions, and events for Mumia. Our generation has been part of a movement of resistance that has shaken things up in anti-war protests around the world. And in this moment of great uncertainty, we are determined to fight for a different future. And then it also mentions that you can make financial contributions to Mumia's legal defense. You can make those out to the National Lawyers Guild Foundation and can mail them to the Committee to Save Mumia Abu-Jamal, 130 Morningside Drive, Suite 6C, New York, New York, 127. So that's 10027. And locally here in Santa Cruz, the Santa Cruz Coalition for Mumia Abu-Jamal and All Political Prisoners has we haven't had regular meetings for a while, but we probably should start that up again. If people are interested in starting up more meetings for the Santa Cruz Coalition, they should call 425-4467, and we can arrange a time that we can get together and try to organize something. The San Francisco people are probably organizing something right at the moment. That's basically all I had for an update. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you, John. And I guess there's a website you can go to. I guess you can go to Pages in Color and get an update on that, right? Pagesincolor.com will give an update on Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Yeah, we're
not regular updates. Right. Okay. This is 101.1 FM, in case you were wondering. And also www.freakradio.org. We're going out by internet. You want to reach us, you can call in at the studio right now, in case you got something you want to say, and saying to all of us, 427-3772, all the listeners out there. Or you can reach the radio station itself via voicemail at 427-4523. That's for public service announcements, monetary contributions, sort of technical questions, comments you don't want publicly aired. And actually, it's not things you do want to publicly air, but you don't want them aired perhaps right now, or you want them aired in a repeated way as a PSA or public service announcement would be aired. You call in, you give your announcement, and we'll play it later on at suitable times and repeat it at suitable times. So, again, the number for that service is 427-4523. The number to call in case you wish to voice your concerns now or say anything you want now is 427-3772 here on Free Radio. So, on July 4th, I was at the flag burning at the Harvey West Park, and actually took some audio of that, but it was it's more a visual event than an audio event, but it had a small turnout, and Food Not Bomb served some great food. I was given by Leela some information she wanted read on the air, and it's been delayed so long it may not be terribly useful, but I think it probably still is useful. She's concerned about Rudy Cardenas. Rudy Cardenas is a father of five that was shot and killed by state narcotics agent Michael Walker, according to this website information I'm reading that she gave me. Rudy Cardenas was mistaken for David Gonzalez, a wanted parolee. Rudy Cardenas was shot in the back while pleading for his life on February 17, 2004. He was shot around 1:23 p.m. on 4th and Street and St. James in San Jose. Rudy Cardenas then laid on the concrete bleeding while officers held back the paramedics. About half an hour later, paramedics were able to take Rudy to the hospital. He was brought to the San Jose Medical Center with no pulse. They tried to revive him, but it was too late. The mother had lost her youngest son, and five children had lost their father. The Cardenas family built this webpage for the memory of Rudy Cardenas. The Cardenas family is currently fighting for truth and justice. This happens too often in our community, and we need to make a change before another life is lost, according to Corina Cardenas. And the website is, www.rudycardenas, R-U-D-Y, capital C-A-R-D-E-N-A-S, Cardenas. If you're English-speaking, you might see it as cardenas.net, or Cardenas, Cardenas. Anyway, you can check it out there. And what's coming up, there was a lot of stuff coming up last month, various meetings of End police brutality seminars, Justice for Rudy. There was a car wash on July 10th. There was a decision apparently on July 16th if the grand jury is going to be opened or closed. And there was a march yesterday for Cao Thi Bich Tran. And Cao Thi, of course, was the Vietnamese woman who wielded a criminal vegetable peeler and was shot dead by a police officer in her own home last summer. You may remember that case, all exonerated, of course. And tomorrow, July 19th, should be the beginning of the grand jury hearing in the case of Rudy Cardenas and the man who shot him, Michael Walker. So if you want more information on that, you can go on the web and find out. What a cop does in the official line of duty is by its nature public, and opening a hearing is the best remedy when a life has been lost under circumstances this questionable. Public scrutiny is not too high a price to pay, according to the San Jose Mercury News, or somebody quoted therein. This is going to be happening. Well, there was there was going to be a decision as to whether or not it would be open in the courtroom of Honorable Thomas Hansen, Superior Court Department 22 in the old courthouse on North 1st Street in San Jose. But I would suggest you need to go online to find out what the latest update. Probably I will do that, actually, while we take I think we'll take a musical break. I think what we'll do is we'll play a little bit more of what's been happening. Well, no, we'll take a musical break. Here's a little music by Valerie Christie.
Let go of the laziness and tears.
also here live every Wednesday, along with a fleet of other fine singers. In fact, you can hear yourself live if you are still alive and are into that kind of live singing on Wednesday in front of New Leaf Market, 6 to 9. Come on down. We need you. New York Times today, which costs $5 for all of you ricos out there, or I guess it might be sitting in the library eventually one of these days, has a story about police use of tasers. I'm going to read a little bit from that story from Nazareth, Pennsylvania. As the sun set on June 24th, something snapped in Chris J. Lieberman, an unemployed landscaper who lived a few miles from this quiet town. For 45 minutes, he crawled deliriously around a pasture here, moaning and pounding his head against the weedy ground. Eventually, the police arrived carrying a Taser M26, an electric gun, increasingly popular with law enforcement officers nationwide. The gun fires electrified barbs up to 21 feet, hitting suspects with a disabling charge. The officers told Mr. Lieberman, 32, to calm down. He lunged at them instead. They fired their tasers twice. He fought briefly, collapsed, and died. Mr. Lieberman joined a growing number of people, now at least 50, including six in June alone, who have died since 2001 after being shocked. Taser International, which makes several versions of the gun, says its weapons are not lethal, even for people with heart conditions or pacemakers. The deaths resulted from drug overdoses or other factors and would have occurred anyway, the company says. But Taser has scant evidence for that claim. The company's primary safety studies on the M26, which is far more powerful than other stun guns, consist of tests on a single pig in 1996 and on five dogs in 1999. Company-paid researchers, not independent scientists, conducted the studies, which were never published in a peer-reviewed journal. Taser has no full-time medical director and has never created computer models to simulate the effect of its shocks, which are difficult to test in human clinical trials for ethical reasons. What is more, aside from a continuing Defense Department study, the results of which have not been released, no federal or state agencies have studied the safety or effectiveness of tasers, which fall between two federal agencies and are essentially unregulated. Nor has any federal agency studied the deaths to determine what caused them. In at least two cases, local medical examiners have said tasers were partly responsible. In many cases, autopsies are continuing or reports are unavailable. The few independent studies that have examined the taser have found that the weapon's safety is unproven at best. The most comprehensive report by the British government in 2002 concluded the high-powered tasers cannot be classed in the vernacular as safe. Britain has not approved tasers for general police use. The 1989 Canadian study found that stun guns induced heart attacks in pigs with pacemakers. A 1999 study by the Department of Justice on an electrical weapon much weaker than the taser found that it might cause cardiac arrest in people with heart conditions. In reviewing other electrical devices, the Food and Drug Administration has found that a charge half as large as that of an M26 can be dangerous to the heart. While Taser says that the M26 is not dangerous, it now devotes most of its marketing efforts to the X26, a less powerful weapon it introduced last year. Both weapons are selling briskly. About 100,000 officers nationally now have Tasers, 20 times the number in 2000, and most carry the M26. Taser, whose guns are legal for civilian use in most states, hopes to expand its potential market with a new consumer version of X26 later this summer. For Taser, which owns the weapons trademark and is the only company now making the guns, the growth has been a bonanza. Its stock has soared. Its executives and directors, including a former New York police commissioner, Bernard B. Carrick, have taken advantage, selling $60 million in shares since November. Patrick Smith, Taser's chief executive, said the guns are safe. "We tell people that this has never caused a death, and in my heart and soul, I believe that's true," Mr. Smith said. Taser did not need to disclose the British results to American police departments, he said. "The Brits are extremely conservative," he said. "To me, this is a sort of boilerplate, the fine print." In addition to Taser's animal trials, thousands of police volunteers have received shocks without harm, Mr. Smith said. But the hits that police officers receive from the M26 and their Taser training have little in common with the shocks given to suspects. In training, volunteers usually receive a single shock of a half second or less. In the field, tasers automatically fire for 5 seconds. If an officer holds down the trigger, a taser will discharge longer, and suspects are often hit repeatedly. Overall, Taser has significantly overstated the weapon's safety, say biomedical engineers, who separately examined the company's research at the request of the New York Times. None of the engineers had any financial stake in the company or any connection with Taser, and the Times did not pay them. Relatively small electrical shocks can kill people whose hearts are weakened by disease or cocaine use, said John Wixquo, a Vanderbilt University biomedical engineer. But no one knows whether the Taser's current crosses the threshold for those people, Dr. Wixquo said. Their testing scheme has not included the possibility that there is a subset of the population that is exquisitely sensitive, Dr. Wixquo said. That alone means they have not done adequate testing. Mr. Smith of the Taser company said Taser would eventually run more tests. In a perfect world, I'd love to have studies and all this stuff, but animal studies are controversial, expensive, he said. You've got to do the reasonable amount of testing. Comparing Taser's tests with the studies conducted by makers of medical devices like pacemakers is unfair, he said. Dr. Andrew Podgorski, a Canadian electrical engineer who conducted the 1989 study, said he was certain that tasers were dangerous for people with pacemakers. More research is needed to determine if other people are vulnerable, he said. I would urge the U.S. government to conduct those studies, Dr. Podgorski said. Shocking a couple of pigs and dogs doesn't prove anything. Many police officers defend the taser, saying the weapon helps them avoid using deadly force and lowers the risk of injury to officers. Tasers let police officers subdue suspects without wrestling with or hitting them, said Dave Klinger, a former police officer and a criminology professor at the University of Missouri at St. Louis. And tasers are surely safer than firearms. I think it's appropriate for deployment in the field, Mr. Klinger said. You trust this guy or gal with a gun, you should be able to trust them with a less lethal device. But human rights groups say the police may be overusing the taser. Because the gun leaves only light marks and because taser markets it as non-lethal, officers often use it on unruly suspects, not just as an alternative to deadly force, said Dr. William F. Schultz, the executive director of Amnesty International USA. In recent incidents, officers have shocked a 9-year-old girl in Arizona and a 66-year-old woman in Kansas City. We think there should be controlled, systematic, independent medical studies, Dr. Schultz said. We would like to see these weapons suspended until these questions are answered. A study by the Orange County, Florida Sheriff's Office showed that officers used pepper spray and batons much less after getting the guns, but the use of tasers more than made up for the drop, and the department's overall use of force increased 58% between 2000 and 2003. Last week, several police departments in Orange County agreed to restrict the use of tasers to situations where suspects are actively resisting officers. The sheriff's office is not a part of the agreement and says it is still studying the matter. State and federal agencies do not keep tabs on taser use, so no one knows how many times officers have fired the weapon. Officers have reported close to 5,000 uses of the M26-2 taser, but the company says that the actual number is much higher. Little evidence supports the theory that tasers reduce police shootings or work better than other alternatives to guns like pepper spray. Because of their limited range, tasers are best in situations where an officer using a taser is covered by another with a firearm, officers say. A 2002 company study found that nearly 85% of people shocked with tasers were unarmed. Fewer than 5% were carrying guns. In Phoenix, which has equipped all its officers with tasers, police shootings fell by half last year. Taser trumpets that statistic on its website. But last year's drop appears to be an anomaly. This year's shootings are running at a record pace, according to the Phoenix Police Department. A 2002 study in Greene County, Missouri, found that tasers were only marginally more effective than pepper spray at restraining suspects. Pepper spray worked in 91% of the cases, while taser had a 94% success rate. The largest police departments have been slow to embrace the taser. The NYPD, New York Police Department, owns only a handful of tasers, which are used by specialized units and supervisors, a spokesman said. The M26 was introduced only 5 years ago, but the technology is much older. John Cover, an Arizona inventor, created the taser in 1969. Its name stands for Thomas A. Swift Electric Rifle, an allusion to Tom Swift's series of science fiction novels. Engineers have known for generations that relatively small electrical currents cause painful and uncontrollable muscle contractions. Tasers operate on that principle, firing barbs that are connected by wire to the gun and flood the body with current. The gun can deliver its shock even if the barbs do not break the skin, because its current can jump through 2 inches of clothing. Weak currents are not inherently dangerous. if they stop in a few minutes. But stronger shocks can disrupt the electrical circuitry of the heart. That condition, ventricular fibrillation, causes cardiac arrest in seconds and death in minutes unless the heart is defibrillated with an even larger shock. The exact current needed to cause fibrillation depends on technical factors like the current's shape and frequency, as well as the heart's condition, said James Eason, a biomedical engineering professor at Washington and Lee University. But because fibrillation is so dangerous, scientists can conduct only limited human trials. They must estimate the threshold of fibrillation from animal trials and computer models. Still, the broad parameters for fibrillation are known, and the first taser from Mr. Cover had a large safety margin. In 1975, the Consumer Product Safety Commission concluded that that weapon, which was 11% as powerful as the M26, probably would not harm healthy humans. Then, in March 1976, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms claimed it had jurisdiction over the weapons because gunpowder propelled their barbs. The Firearms Bureau essentially outlawed them for civilian use. No federal safety standard was ever created. But the original tasers were bulky and often ineffective. For almost two decades, they remained a niche product used by a few police departments. That began to change in 1993 when Mr. Smith and his brother Thomas created a company to market electrical weapons to civilians. Patrick Smith, who had just graduated from the University of Chicago Business School, saw enormous potential for an alternative to firearms. I just figured I'm going to get out to Arizona, I'm going to scratch and sniff and dig, and I figure there's going to be gold and then in those hills, Mr. Smith said in an interview. In January 1995, the Smiths introduced their first electric gun, which was powered by compressed nitrogen. As a result, the weapon was not regulated by the Firearms Bureau and could be sold to civilians. For the next several years, the company struggled as concerns over the gun's power kept sales slow. By 1999, the company, now known as Taser International, was near bankruptcy with only $50,000 in the bank and $2.7 million in debt. It was pretty humiliating, he said. We had completely wiped out my parents financially. Hoping to stay afloat, the company introduced the Advanced Taser M26 in December 1999. The weapon closely resembled a handgun, a feature many police officers liked, and was very powerful. According to Taser, the gun produced 26 watts of power, four times the power of the earlier model. A field test in 2001 by the Canadian police showed that the M26 was even stronger, with an output of 39 watts. Stun gun power is usually gauged in watts, a measure of electrical energy, even though the biological effects of electricity are more closely related to current strength, measured in amperes. Electrical engineers often compare the flow of electricity to a river. Amperes are like the river's speed, while watts are the amount of water flowing by each second. As watts increase, amperes rise, but more slowly. Taser's sales rose as officers learned about the new gun. At meetings with police officers, company reps encouraged them to receive a half-second shock, to feel the weapon's power for themselves. These guys would leave just absolutely evangelical about the product because we would just drop them all, Mr. Smith said. In its marketing, the company touted the safety of the M26, saying it had been extensively tested. But Taser had performed only two animal studies before introducing the M26. In 1996, Taser hired Robert Strottbucker, a Nebraska doctor and farmer, to test the weapon. Dr. Strottbucker, who is now Taser's part-time medical director, shocked a pig 48 times with shocks as large as those from the M26. The pig suffered no heart damage. 3 years later, the company hired Dr. Strottbucker and Dr. Wayne McDaniel, an electrical engineer, for an animal test at the University of Missouri. The scientists shocked five anesthetized dogs about 200 times with the M26. The dogs did not suffer cardiac arrest, although one animal had changes in its heartbeat, according to a report. Taser has repeatedly said that the studies proved that the M26 was safe. But the biomedical engineers who reviewed the gun safety for the Times said Taser should have conducted far more research. I don't think there has been a definitive study saying that yes, it can contribute to death, or no, it cannot, said Dr. Raymond Itaker, an electrophysiologist and a professor in the cardiology division at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Taser must test more animals and vary the shocks they receive to find the gun's safety margin, Dr. Itaker said. In addition, while Taser claims that its Missouri study proves the gun is safe for people who have used cocaine, it never tested animals dosed with cocaine. Because cocaine substantially increases heart attack risk, tasers are used on people who have taken cocaine, and because tasers are used on people who have taken cocaine, that omission is a serious flaw, said Dr. Wixwo of Vanderbilt. The company should also examine risks other than fibrillation, some scientists say. Dr. Terrence Allen, a former medical examiner in Los Angeles who examined cases in the late 1980s when people died after being shocked with earlier model tasers, said he was sure the weapons could be lethal. Taser is misrepresenting the medical evidence, said Dr. Allen, who has consulted for people who have sued the company. Dr. Mark W. Kroll, a taser director and the chief technology officer of St. Jude Medical, one of the largest pacemaker manufacturers, said Taser had adequately tested its weapons and that they were safe. External pacemakers deliver much larger charges and do not cause fibrillation, he said. Dr. Itaker countered that pacemakers and tasers could not be easily compared because taser's shock is very short and powerful, while a pacemaker delivers its charge over a much longer period. Although Taser has performed only rudimentary studies of the M26, it has more closely studied the X26. It has more closely studied the X26, the gun it introduced last year. In a 2003 study at the University of Missouri, Taser found that a shock roughly 20 times that of the X26 caused a healthy anesthetized 85-pound pig to fibrillate. Mr. Smith cites the 2003 Missouri study as proof that all tasers have a safety margin of 20 to 1 or more, but the new gun puts out a charge only one-fourth as large as the older model, a fact Taser does not generally advertise. The study said nothing about the M26 or about hearts stressed by disease, drugs, or physical activity. I think another test is warranted, Dr. Itaker says. Taser did not test the older gun, which is associated with nearly all the deaths, because, quote, we believe that the M26 safety record and prior testing speaks for itself, Mr. Smith said. Could it be done? Absolutely, but there's time and expense involved. The X26, the newer gun, has become Taser's biggest seller, based mainly on the company's claims that it is even stronger than the M26, despite its small size and lower power. The company says the new gun enables electrical current to enter the body more efficiently. No independent agency has tested the gun side by side, and in Taser's patent on the M26, Mr. Smith himself argued that weaker guns were often ineffective because they do not deliver enough current to incapacitate suspects. But neither deaths nor concerns about effectiveness have dampened police support and investor enthusiasm for Taser International. Stock analysts predict Taser will have $15 million in profits on sales of $60 million in 2004. Investors have bid up the company's shares 60-fold since last February, giving Taser a value of $1.2 billion. The Smith brothers and their father, Phillips, have sold $46 million in Taser shares since November, according to federal filings. They still own $130 million worth of shares. Other Taser executives and directors have sold $14 million in stocks. Mr. Carrick, the former New York police commissioner and a director, has sold $900,000 in stock. Mr. Kroll of St. Jude Medical has sold $1.7 million. It's been great, Patrick Smith said of the company's great success, but making money is not his goal, he said, not his main goal. If we could get a Taser on every officer's belt, it would save hundreds of lives or thousands of lives a year. Meanwhile, the number of Taser-associated deaths is rising. In June alone, at least six people died, the most ever in one month. Eric B. Christmas, James A. Cobb, Jacob J. Lair, Anthony C. Oliver, Jerry W. Pickens, and Mr. Lieberman. The circumstances of the deaths vary widely. Among the six, Mr. Pickens was the only one hit with the X-26. Mr. Cobb fought for several minutes after being shocked, which suggests the fibrillation could not have caused his death. Some of the other men collapsed immediately, according to news reports and witnesses. Some of the men were fighting with the police when officers shot them. Others simply refused to obey orders. Mr. Pickens was one. On June 4th in Bridge City, Louisiana, the police were summoned to help him calm him after an argument with his 18-year-old son, Taylor Pickens. Jerry Pickens confronted the police in the family's front yard. My dad, he had been drinking, and he was kind of hostile toward the police, Taylor said. He kept trying to go back inside the house, and they said, if you're going to go back into the house, we're going to taser you. Mr. Pickens, who was unarmed, began to walk inside, Taylor said. They counted down three, and then they shot him in the back, Taylor said. My dad stiffened up and fell back. Mr. Pickens hit his head on a cement walkway and began foaming at the mouth, Taylor said. Sharon Landis, Taylor's mother, Mr. Pickens' wife, said officers did not need to shock her husband. They could have pepper sprayed him, they could have grabbed him. He said he's 55 years old, and these are big, burly cops. Mr. Pickens was pronounced brain dead that day and removed from life support 3 days later, Ms. Landis said. Toxicological tests on Mr. Pickens are being conducted, said Gail Day of the Jefferson Parish Coroner's Office. A spokesman for the Sheriff's Office said he could not comment on a continuing investigation. Mr. Smith said he could not comment on Mr. Pickens' death. 3 weeks later, Chris Lieberman died in Pennsylvania. The officers who shocked him were the only witnesses to his death, which the Pennsylvania State Police are investigating. But Mr. Lieberman's parents said the state police told them that their son was shocked twice and collapsed backward. Stan Coopersmith, chief of the Bushill Township Police, whose officers responded to the call, said he could not comment on the incident until the state police department finishes their investigation. But Taser said that the police chief had told the company that Mr. Lieberman fought briefly after the shocks and that an automatic defibrillator used by the officers indicated Mr. Lieberman was not fibrillating when he collapsed. I would suspect the autopsy would find a cause of death that does not include the taser, Mr. Smith said. Mr. Lieberman's parents say that he was troubled but that he did not use drugs. Police officers searched Mr. Lieberman's home after the shooting and did not find drugs, his parents say. Toxicologic reports are pending. Mr. Lieberman's father, Richard, a plain-spoken farmer, said he had not decided whether to hire a lawyer. He simply wants to know if the gun caused his son's death. If he was the problem, we have to accept it, Mr. Lieberman said. If they were the problem, they have to accept it. That is a story from the New York Times, today's Sunday Times, by Alex Berenson, or Berenson, front-page story out of Nazareth, Pennsylvania, as police use of tasers soars, questions over safety emerges. That was a real long story, but very few people can get the New York Times. I guess you can get it online if you want. I thought it was interesting enough to read, and I think we're going to be posting it on Thursday. Huff does a table 2 days a week, Wednesday and Thursday. One of them is in conjunction with Copwatch. That's the local group that monitors the police. I don't know what the current situation on tasers is in Santa Cruz. Hopefully I can find out. And if anyone has more information or has some comments or some thoughts on this, you can, of course, call in. 427-3772 is the call-in number, 831-427-3772, if you're out of the area. You're listening to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris. In the studio with me is Dangerous John T., and we are ready to deal with anything you have to throw at us. Just please, please don't taser us. Numerous police tonight, although they're not on the avenue. Three of them are in the Palomar Hotel, including Officer Brandt. And I believe it was Officer Martinez. Good. What's happening here on the streets, gang? Any comments? Indeed. Christian feedings. I can dig it. Any hassles here for sitting near a building?
No.
For lying on the sidewalk? This is criminal behavior you guys are engaging in. Officer?
Yeah. We haven't seen any officers yet, so we're doing okay.
Yeah, they're down there sitting on the bench.
They generally don't.
There actually are five. There are two police officers on the street on bikes, and there are three in the Palomar Hotel, but they don't seem to be prowling tonight. At least, maybe they're just relaxing. Stay with us while we see what happened to this segment of the tape. While I conduct that investigation, here's some more interviews from a few days later, again at, it's around SAFE event number 23, that's Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, the street performer stuff that goes on Wednesday nights. And you can be a member of the SAFE 25th celebration. There should be some pretty fancy stuff, maybe some balloons, you never can tell. Come on down, 6 to 9 on Wednesday night. Take back your own public sidewalks. Well, it's about 7:15. We're here at SAFE event number 23. This time the table is where the musicians usually stand, and the musicians are where the Huff table is normally set up. And we have a chorus of singers, including Gregory, Bill, Valerie, Susan, and Musical Mike, and a couple of drummers I don't recognize. And then there's a woman registering Democratic voters on a ironing board right next to the singers. So what can you say? The Democrats are everywhere. Becky Johnson is videoing the show, and Chris R. is serving hot soup. What's happening, Chris?
Too many Democrats.
Too many damn Democrats.
It's their sidewalk, too, so, you know, gotta let them be here.
Reluctantly. Also, I noticed that there's a lot of peanut butter and jelly implements and bags and such on one of the tables of Cafe Campesino, which is apparently graciously allowing or studiously ignoring us. We have a squad car, kind of...
Oh, how nice.
I always say double park, but it's not really double park. It's parked right next to the planter right in front of Lincoln Street here on Pacific Avenue. And I know last...
There's a cop in there.
But it's a vacant vehicle. I see up at the host center, there's a police officer looking out the door and now just leaving the police, the informant center. And we'll hope that they're... they haven't really harassed us. Last week, I guess Brandt came and removed his sign. The sign is not standing on public property. It is actually, it's on the sidewalk, but it's supporting itself. Now, whether that's a violation, I wouldn't know. The sign says U.S. out of Iraq now. Yes, honk white. Once, twice. Honk no. Or no. No, honk twice. There we go. It's 8 p.m. We're still at the safe 23. Becky Johnson is here with the Vicious Jim. What's up, Becky?
Oh, well, let's see. When I first got there, there was a police car parked there with nobody in it for a really long time, maybe a half hour or longer. And two officers, Brandt and one other officer, got in and drove off. Then another officer just walked up this way maybe about 5 minutes ago and looked at everything. And there are all kinds of violations going on here. I noticed that this display device here is well within 10 feet of that fence. This Democrat registers the vote here is well within 10 feet of that kiosk. There's just two. I'm sure there are some other ordinances. Well,
somebody's been chalking peace symbols and birds on the sidewalks.
There is some shocking chalking on there.
Shocking chalking.
And doves. Yeah, so, I mean, and you just walk by. So the report is that, no, the police haven't hassled anybody as we speak.
Dig it, baby.
Yeah.
So we have a Colleen Fisher who has her diploma to prove it.
We use my last name too.
Now we know who exactly you are. Colleen, what are you doing hanging out with this group of questionable musicians?
I like them a lot, and they play cool music, and it's all about peace.
Yes, but we already have peace in Iraq. I don't see what your problem is.
Give me a break. I just saw Fahrenheit 9/11.
Yes.
Ooh, it's anything but peace.
Fahrenheit 9/11, the Kerry will bring us peace film. Is that the one?
I'm sorry. I'm not really up for being interviewed right now, but maybe some other time. I just got here. So.
Welcome to our little gathering here. I see. You're working with respect to women's health.
Oh, let's not talk about that.
We're not going to talk about that at this time. Anything else we shouldn't talk about?
Everything.
Everything. There you are. One other thing. Go ahead, Becky. We're talking to the cute couple, as they were known in Ben Lomond, for their constant fondling on the street. Your name, sir?
Bill Hancock.
And your name, madam?
I'm not saying.
I see.
That's my wife, Chris.
Oh, sure. A likely story. Now, yes. How long have the two of you been fondling on the street?
32 years.
32 years of fondling can lead to a number of things. Now,
children.
I see.
And five grandchildren.
Now, but apparently no housing.
No housing.
Now you're an activist who's trying to make some changes here in the city of Santa Cruz. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
What kind of changes are you looking for? Change.
I'd like to get rid of the no camping ban.
Uh-huh.
I mean the camping ban.
Listed.
Yeah, because it's. There's a lot of people that are just caught between the tracks. It's forcing them to become criminals. And the when you force the people to become criminals, it's the society's got it going wrong. I mean, it's not just camping where people are being forced to be criminals. There's a lot of other things where the government puts you in a position where they've got you to break the law so they can control you. You're a criminal. I can take you to jail. You know, it
sucks, the big weenie.
Well, they've got so many traffic laws and so many... For instance, if you do not produce your ID to somebody, to a uniformed officer or something, they can take you to jail for that. You don't have to identify. They can.
Reasonable suspicion. They have reasonable suspicion.
Yes, legally they can. If you're a strange-looking person. And I'm a strange-looking person.
You certainly are pretty strange-looking. Look at you with that beard and that hair, four eyes, glasses. I think we had just about enough of you, strangey. Thank you for talking to us, Bill.
Yes, sir. Yes.
We're talking with Tom B. of Cop Watch. Tom, you've been keeping an eye on the safe number 23 sing-along, and you You notice something unusual?
Well, it's gotten to be, I think, the largest day ever that I've seen so far, and the police have hovered around. I think maybe they were doing something else while they're down the street, but they haven't come and bothered us at all, even though there were maybe five or so in the general area.
Five police officers?
Yes.
Yeah, I was told that various officers have been coming in and out of the downtown information center. I guess maybe they feel it's a one-time event, once a week, sort of the... You know when it starts, you know when it ends. Maybe that's... Although it would be nice to know exactly what their rationale is.
Yeah, I guess maybe they feel like it's an okay bargain if they only have to give up one night a week, and it seems kind of popular and whatever. So.
I agree. A man panhandling, playing music in the very bowels of the Pacific Trading Company. Your name, musician? Nicely put. I like your hat. Now, how's it been going?
Loopy Larry, they call me.
And Loopy, you have, but your guitar has been repaired, it looks like. It's got, not masking tape, but not sealing wax, but sealing.
Let's talk about who I'm voting for president. I'm thinking about, like, the Dwight Eisenhower, Hubert Humphrey ticket. It's kind of a mixed party kind of thing, but, you know.
Yeah, okay. That sounds 40 and a half years old.
I think of the crazy Timmy party.
Timmy doesn't like my belly anymore.
I think of nominating Ronnie Van Zandt for president. He's the all-time.
And there you have it. Electoral politics creeping into an otherwise meaningful conversation. Any hassles from police at this particular venue?
Not yet tonight, but I'm hoping. You know.
Yeah. Well, you can always cross your fingers. But you haven't got a display device here, so I don't think they can have. You can stand wherever you want. Although you are trespassing and loitering, according to the Pacific Trading Company, because you're standing inside their property line. But I don't see the sign that those dirty liars are lying about our anti-homeless position that they used to have in their window. That sign has been removed.
Oh, really?
However, unfortunately, their anti-homeless and anti-musician policies have not. They've been hassling a few musicians out front, not apparently you.
What's really eerie is the woman that runs this place.
Right.
She's, I don't know if she's the owner or not, but she was in the band Dresden years ago. She was a singer.
Really?
An intellectual-looking woman in the 80s. I don't know who she was. She'd go into this artistic dance and everything. I don't know, maybe there's an owner beyond her. But if she is the owner, that's very...
Well, there's Ananda Heinrich, and then the two older owners are the... The couple that actually are her parents, who are still pretty young. I mean, they're 40s or 50s, maybe not too much older.
Old enough to judge the talent, Cindy.
Old enough to tell the city council to remove the seating space here and move the fence at a cost of $7,000. So that people will not be able to sit down.
It might have been nicer if they could have featured barbed wire around the railing.
Barbed wire would make an interesting addition to the downtown, a kind of a candid and refreshing, here you are, take it or leave it quality.
Yeah, you know.
Barbed wire would be good. We could actually post some barbed wire in the... That would be cool. Yeah, that would be good. I like that. And if you got any barbed wire, send it to... Call Huff at 423-HUFF.
Perhaps these hemp plants here, they could maybe perhaps like mow them in the shape of a swastika.
And a little swastika or possibly an American flag with, you know, victory in Iraq on the written on it.
I do a total recall on...
Total retard? Yes, I accept that. Well, thank you, Loopy Larry.
Arnold.
It could have been Arnold, but...
I got my new mustache.
He's working on it. But we'll be back when you perfected this accent, possibly in a few weeks. So it's about 8:30, and in front of Borders, we have a group of 12 or 13 folks in white and some jugglers juggling. I mean, this is a pretty hefty situation. I mean, shocking. Let's go over and investigate, shall we? Yeah, this is actually, according to the flyer I got, juggling and three dance troupes, half-hour show from 9 to 9:30. July 7th, The Catalyst with Alo and Suko on Dollar Night. That's tonight, July 7th. We have a candid reaction to this group from a passerby. How do you feel about this group?
We were playing folk music. Now all we can do is hear their dumb drumming. What are they up to? I don't like it. I think if they start juggling again, I might walk in between where they're juggling and then get hit by a few of those harmless things they're throwing around.
So, do you wish to identify yourself for our record?
My name is Al.
Okay. And you were listening to the Save people singing, or another folk group?
Yeah. They were playing Down by the Riverside, you know, stuff like that.
Suddenly it's Down by the Drummers, eh?
Yeah, now it's Down by the Drummers.
Well, we may have to do something. Thank you.
We're talking with Ryan
and a friend. So, Ryan, what do you have to say about the police?
Well, you know, the police are nice, you know. About a week ago or a week and a half ago, I got arrested for highway surfing on the Highway 17 on my skateboard. It's Rob Roskop, and it's got Route 70 wheels, and it's at the widest truck. So I was basically racing a cop down Highway 17, and I got arrested because I had some stuff that I didn't know I had, which was a crack pipe and a needle. I didn't even know that was there. But, you know, I got charged for two misdemeanors for it, and they took me to jail, but they confiscated everything I had and kept me in jail for only, like, 6 hours. But they were really cool with me. They treated me nicely, and I got out basically Saturday morning, first person out, and they haven't bothered me ever since.
These are police, Highway Patrol, Santa Cruz
police, and then in the county jail, sheriffs. They're pretty nice.
And you say that, however, ordinary people have not been giving you so, treating you so well?
Yeah.
Yes, you're coming to the wedding tonight.
Go ahead. Continue. Some of the street kids have not a lot, but a couple has been harassing me, and I got hit last night in the jaw, and I got spit on in the face today.
I got, why? You know?
Why?
What was their deal?
Because a couple months back, this guy's 18, but I ain't gonna say no name. But, you know, he stole $50 from me a few months back, and I sold his jacket recently for $10 because to get back at him. And his little brother hit me last night and spit in my face today. And ever since he spit in my face, I've been feeling this really sick stomach in my feeling. You know, I figured it'd be fair, you know, fair and square, because he didn't hurt me, I didn't hurt him. He stole the material, I sold the material, and I thought I got him back evenly, but apparently that jacket was very valuable to him. It's just like how it hurt me, because he was a good friend of mine, and he stole $50 from me. That really hurt me just as much as it hurt him as when I sold his jacket.
Are you sleeping out?
Yes, I'm out here on the streets as well, myself.
And have you been hassled for that?
No, I have not. No, I have not.
Well, cool. Anything you want to say to Free Radio otherwise?
Rock on and have peace and love.
We've been talking with
Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
Them are gonna get the time.
Got it.
Oh, how long to the killer prophets, while we stand aside and look. Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help us sing these songs of freedom? It's all I ever have. Redemption songs.
Okay, we're talking with
Pat.
And Pat, you had an incident reported to you a couple of days ago that happened near Foster's in Santa Cruz?
Right. Actually, the report was just reported to me, but I think the incident happened either yesterday or the day before, so we're probably talking about Monday or Sunday. And this is a girl who has reported to me before, because I'm affiliated with Santa Cruz Cop Watch, about intimidation by the police. She's an activist who does a lot of community work, and has expressed that she feels targeted partially because of her race and because of her outward expression of her rights to freedom of speech. And
an American of Iranian descent who looks perhaps like a Mexican? That's some
right.
people?
That's right. And has been intimidated on several occasions, has filled out reports with us at Cop Watch about those incidents, and there was already some definite misconduct on the police part and intimidation practices. And what it sounds like has happened is that she was crossing the street from Foster Freeze within the last 2 days and was wearing a t-shirt that said "Fuck the State" when a police officer drove by, and she waved at the police officer. This prompted the car apparently to turn around and tail her for a moment before saying to come here, which is actually something that happened with earlier incidents with her, where the police were telling her come over, we want to talk to you, and she refused because she doesn't. She didn't do anything and wasn't asking to talk to the police. At this point, according to witnesses that were there...
How many witnesses do you know?
I guess there's at least two. She was run down by this officer and put in a headlock and tackled to the ground.
The officer got out of the car?
Yeah. And there were, at some point quickly, there were four other police cars there. And...
About what time and day or night did this happen?
Yeah, we don't know. And she's a UCSC student, and it definitely put a fright into her. I'm not sure who's talked to her yet about this, but we want to make her feel better about it, and definitely try to mobilize a response to an attack on a member of our community, especially this type of targeting that. We might have seen less politically with the sweeps on the homeless or people sleeping outdoors or minority communities, but definitely, female activists in this community need to be defended.
And we've been talking with
Pat.
And Pat, you work with Cop Watch. How can folks contact Cop Watch?
Let's see. We have a website, www.santacruzcopwatch.org, and the phone number is on that site. You can fill out reports on the website. You can call our voicemail and leave a report, and our binder, it might be between homes soon, but you can pick up Cop Watch literature at the info shop, among other places around town.
Thank you, Pat.
Thanks.
It's getting close to the end of Bathurst Spears Broadsides, but I have great news for those who've been listening to this particular or waiting for this particular deal. And I don't know how many people have been, but probably very few. I know my producer has. Council meeting before last, Scott Kennedy, the mayor, actually allowed some of his critics to make public comments in the period of time when normally people are allowed to make public comments. That is to say, when items come up and they're removed from the consent agenda. That is the agenda in the afternoon, when normally it's all passed as a lump, but you can take an item off and then it's discussed briefly individually before being voted on individually by the city council. What Kennedy's past practice, and apparently his future practice, because he did it again last week, has been, is to selectively allow discussion of items whose speakers he wants to allow to speak. And that does not include me, and it does not include, a number of other people. Becky Johnson, probably Michael Tomasi. It's not included people from People Power, too, in the past, and in terms of the Broadway-Brommer bike path. That was kicked to the end of the agenda, too. This has deleterious effects for a number of reasons. You might say, well, everybody's got to kind of share the time, and sometimes you can't be heard when you want to be heard, and that's true. However, what happens in this situation is that you're told to come back at a time uncertain, many hours down the road. So in order to really find out what's going on, you either have to watch television continuously, if you happen to have cable, which I don't, and a television, which I don't usually, until I get at my house there is a television, but not usually. I don't have access to a television. Or you have to hang out for hour after hour waiting until finally toward the very end, unless they postpone it to another day for some reason, which they don't usually do, you'll be able to talk for probably, 1 to 3 minutes, depending upon their pleasure on the item. Now, sometimes this is a necessary measure because there are other time constraints, like they've scheduled other events. I mean, sometimes it's necessary to move items ahead or move them back, however you put it, and move them down the road further in time. But this should be done, I think, with consideration of the people you're doing it to. Not just if it's me, obviously, but if it's anybody else. You ask the audience if they can return at a certain time and talk about the item. Use some normal courtesy, the kind of thing which the city council not only expects but requires. And 3 weeks ago, when there were a number of items on the consent agenda, I don't know, Kennedy had a happy evening, or possibly there was not much else on the agenda, or who knows what he was thinking, but he actually allowed us to speak, and we spoke on a number of items. Becky and I and Michael Tomasi was also there. The grizzled, outspoken, sounds crazy as hell, but listen very closely and you'll find out he's not. Vet, who salutes the flag and wants you to join him in the Pledge of Allegiance and all this other stuff at City Council. Anyway, the items that we pulled, I've already played most of them when the video machine here, which I have to play them on because I have a videotape, I'm playing the audio section of it, was working, and then I couldn't get it to work for a while, but now we have the proper connectors, and indeed, I'm going to play for you now the discussion on two items. Becky Johnson's talking about the police and the question of a CSO, a community service officer, and then the discussion of the city attorney's contract. The city attorney is the man who you pay to defend the city in court. This is the guy who has essentially sold out the Clearview Court and the De Anza residence. This is the guy who prosecutes people for chalking on the sidewalk, for having a table more than 60 minutes, for playing a video on the sidewalk downtown, if it's a critical of the police, for having a political table on the sidewalk, a whole series of repressive things. This is the guy who spent $1 million of your money supporting the right of the police to invade the Blue Lagoon bar and harass them. Recently, that was actually taken to court, and there was a successful settlement for over $500,000. And my question was, shouldn't there be some review of this guy's contract, at least some competitive bidding on the issue around the city attorney? So anyway, you're going to hear some of this now, and that's coming up. This is from the city council meeting of late June.
Most of the points in the last item, and that I could I think that many of them apply to this item as well. And I just think we have too many of these little ordinances that have nothing to do with crimes, that just are make work assignments for our public enforcement officials. And it's a huge expense to the city. And I think it reduces the quality of life for people visiting the downtown area. It is the center of our community. It is our town. It's where people meet and gather, and they should be able to gather peaceably, you know, freedom to assemble. And I think that's the spirit of that is being violated by the nature of which you're putting such a disproportional portion of our public safety budget into the downtown area, where basically these officers, these CSOs, are the equivalent of private security guards subsidized by the voters. And I really urge you to reevaluate the way that you are treating the downtown area in terms of law enforcement. A lot of these ordinances should go. I have one other question. It has to do with why do we have an armed police officer standing in the doorway? There are only 9 people in the audience. If you look behind me, there's nobody back there. Is there some kind of security concern you're worried about?
Johnson, if you've concluded your comments on the issue, please step down from the podium.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Rutkin.
I just want to say that having read reviews of the logs that are virtually every minute is spent by the CSOs and the hosts downtown, believe that they have plenty of work to do down there. In fact, we could use more support in terms of making it a safe and inviting place for all members of the community. And I move approval of this item.
Second. Motion by Rotkin, second by Riley. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes unanimously. The next item is item number 31.
It was 29, actually.
29.
I'm sorry, 29. It also was pulled by Ms. Johnson. Yeah. I'm just seeing if you guys are watching me closely enough.
I also pulled it. I could speak on it if...
Please. If you want. It's public comment.
Thank you. I hope that you don't have to use the police officer at this time. I see the purpose.
I don't anticipate it, but I'm sure...
I don't either.
You'll test the limits.
I just noticed your response at the last to Ms. Johnson. This is an item about the city attorney, whose legal force backs up all this stuff that we've been talking about to the community. And I want to say, first of all, that I regard John Barisoni as a very personable person, and this is not personally directed at him at all. Unfortunately, because he's in the position he's in, I must make these comments, and I hope he doesn't take them personally. They're not intended as such. I am concerned that this $500,000 contract, which doesn't appear online, by the way, and documentation. It would be nice if you put it online. You don't get to see that. You have to come down here or go to the library to read these documents. Has there actually ever been any kind of competitive bidding for this contract? I mean, is there any independent oversight of the city attorney? I know John's both city attorney, both Capitola and Santa Cruz. Has any independent assessment been done of the concerns that cases like the Blue Lagoon's $1 million plus bill for the city, concerns about the failure to write an effective rent control law for De Anza in 1994, which I believe Mayor Kennedy shares some responsibility for. I mean, we have a situation where massive groups of seniors and also low-income residents in De Anza have had rent control ripped out from under them because of, it looks to me like, a certain level of legal, I don't want to say incompetence because I'm not qualified to say that, but there are those who have made those allegations. Have they been independently researched by this council and investigated? Independent financial assessments. I'm also looking at the very specific resolution, and I see that while it's $500,000 generally, there are all kinds of additional expenses that may come into play. If you look at different provisions, paragraph 4 talks about reimbursing out-of-pocket expenses, number 8 about eminent domain expenses, number 9 additional compensation expenses. I mean, I'd like to know from this council, maybe the public has a right to see, how much beyond the $500,000 from last year, if that's what the amount was spent by the city on the Barisoni firm here. And again, this does not suggest that there was any malfeasance or incompetence, but this is public information that we need to have in order to make an informed decision. It would also be helpful to have other people considered for this position, I would think, and for there to be some competitive bidding or some competitive examination. And also, as I said before, independent oversight. I'm not aware that there's any independent oversight around this situation other than this pro forma vote, which will pass, no doubt, 7-1 or 7-0 with
no
debate.
Your time is up.
Thank you very much.
We got our speakers.
Oh, city attorney. Hi, I have a personal experience with John Barisoni. He prosecuted me for hopscotching on the sidewalk. Well, actually, hopscotching wasn't my crime. It was actually the hopscotch board that I drew with sidewalk chalk on a public sidewalk. And, you know, it's kind of strange because we've had chalking on the sidewalks for as long as I've lived here, all kinds of places. I'm a teacher. The kids chalk out at the playground, my schools. I'm very much against vandalism and oppose it and have great sympathy for people who suffer from vandalism or malicious damage to their property. This is not. Chalking on the sidewalk is a thing. John Barisoni, our city attorney, took this case up with my co-defendant, Tim Rinker. We estimate he spent probably about $15,000 prosecuting Tim and I for chalking on a sidewalk. And I counted 7 city employees who came up to testify. I assume all of them were on the city payroll at the time. That's just one. I mean, I don't like the way that the medical marijuana ordinance was written by John Barisoni. I think that the way he wrote the TOT tax provision was poorly worded. That would have provided some funding for homeless services. That would have passed if it had been written better. It had a loophole the size of a $600,000 truck could drive through it. And it was just poorly written, and people had counseled you on that, too, and you ignored good counsel, the people that came to you and told you how to do it better. Do we have any competitive bidding for city attorney's position? We certainly need a city attorney, but don't we need a city attorney who's going to deal with the nuts and bolts of the city and not be distracted by what was this, some personal vendetta? I'm the only person that's ever been convicted of hopscotching in the city of Santa Cruz.
Ms. Johnson, were you actually convicted of that in that prosecution?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Tomasi.
Yes, I happen to have been around with all of this stuff was helping with it. Hops, chops, and stuff like this. Well, you know something? That's the most outrageous, stupid thing I've ever heard in my life. But I tell you what, I'm talking about the Santa Cruz Police Department. I was sitting in Lighthouse Field the other day. This guy called the Santa Cruz Police Department. This woman had got shot in her leg.
You know, Mr. Tomasi, this is about the city attorney's contract.
Excuse me, Mr. Barazzoni is one of the greatest, the most outrageous, the most finest lawyers in Santa Cruz, California. The only thing wrong with him, he's barbaric, just like Mr. Wilson and a few other people around here. But this man over here, you can't find any finer of a damn lawyer in his life. He actually took that woman to court, kicked her butt, made her pay a fine for putting hopscotch on the ground. Right on. Mr. Barazzoni is a good man. He's better than, what's his name? Who's that? Who's the other guy that was trying to get the...
It's supposed to be about Mr. Barazzoni.
Yeah, just speak about this.
Well, I don't know. He was a chump anyway, man. He was a lawyer on my family's side, but I forgot his name. Because you know something? I always forget the bad. And there's bad in everything, man. But this man, he's totally good. He's just a little confused because he hangs around with the wrong gentleman. Just like my goddess over here, man. She's just a little out of the whack, but because she's sitting alongside this man by the name of Mr. Fitzmaurice. But, you know, we're all great, but this man right here is a good man. But he ought to quit beating up on the children.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tomasi.
I would like to make a comment.
I'll get to everybody in turn. I do want to say that thank you. Of course, I think it's obvious to the public that city attorney acts at the direction of the city council. When he wages a lawsuit, successful or failing, it's at the request and direction of the city council, not his own initiative. And when he crafts an ordinance, that ordinance is reviewed and approved or rejected by the city council. So many of the criticisms, if they had any validity, would be directed at city council rather than city attorney. It kind of boggles the mind, or at least tests the imagination, to think how far out of line you'd have to go to actually get convicted for hopscotch chalking on a sidewalk. That really takes special effort. And Mr. Tomasi, that's your final warning. You'll be asked to leave if there's one more outburst. That's your last warning. Councilmember Fitzmaurice.
Well, I just wanted to say that
You know, when people decide to mark a sidewalk every day, and I've seen it happen. When I was a mayor, somebody marked the sidewalk outside the front door of City Hall every day. And every morning, somebody who's got plenty to do, a working person, not unfortunately, it wasn't the city manager or the city attorney or me or anyone else that went out there and had to clean it up, but somebody that worked in the city had to go out and clean it up every day. It's astounding that people don't see their actions as having any kind of impact in the world. I just don't understand it. And on people, on working people, I guess they assume that that those people are there to clean up after them. And we don't make that assumption. And part of the vandalism that Ms. Johnson detests is detestable because it lays that kind of burden on people that work in the city, and it's quite frustrating when you have a big job to do to have to go out and do that every morning at 7 o'clock because somebody's in the middle of the night has come there and decided to mark up the sidewalk right in front of, you know, in City Hall or downtown or wherever it is, because those markings are not always as innocuous as a hopscotch grid or something like this. They're often something else. So I certainly support this contract. I think the city, like, I want to reflect what the mayor said, that city attorney does things at our behest. And if somebody should be held to account for them, we should be held to account for them. I'm quite happy to be held to account for that. So I'll move accepting this contract.
Do you have a motion to
second.
Approve? Second by Matthews. Councilmember Rodkin.
First of all, thank you. I'll support this as well. I agree with the comments already made. I just wanted to add two others. We do regularly review the city attorney's contract in relation to the cost from other alternatives, and although it's not formally put out to bid, the council as a whole regularly, I would say every year, informally about every other year, does looks at what other city attorneys pay for comparable cities, numbers of cases, and so forth, and I think we get an extremely good deal from Mr. Barisoni's firm for the city of Santa Cruz. The other comment I want to make is I've been arrested about 30 times for civil disobedience, various times on various kinds of issues. And the one thing that I've never done is whine about having been arrested because the attorney that built the case against me or the officer that carted me off to jail, you're trying to make a point about some what you believe is some abuse in society, you ask to be arrested, and then you hope you have your day in court to try and build public opinion in support of what you've done or about the issues. So to come in here and whine when you've been arrested trying to make a broader point, and then you've been convicted, is so outrageous that it passes the imagination.
I think we're getting some momentum here. Councilmember Matthews.
Abandoning that thread and seconding my motion, I just want to explicitly express, I think on behalf of the whole council, our confidence and appreciation for the dedication and quality of work we get from the entire city attorney's staff, explicitly.
Absolutely. And those who've been out of town or not following developments, this contract with the city attorney actually represents, if my memory serves me correctly, about a 4.8% reduction over this year's contract. It's a significant sacrifice on behalf of the city attorney and his entire staff in the best interest of the city and its citizens at a time when we're under tremendous financial strain to maintain anything resembling the same level of service. He, as well as a lot of the bargaining units, city manager and others, have made personal sacrifices to keep the city afloat and able to deliver services. That's one reason I think, if I can speak a little bit on behalf of other council members, why we get sometimes a little impatient at people who seem to have no qualms about running costs up, which seem to us to be frivolous, whether it's additional work for our parks and recreation staff or facilities maintenance crews, police officers, CSOs, who have to, or the city attorney, who's repeatedly taken, required to go to court to deal with frivolous lawsuits. And that's one reason I think that it's important that council, and we have been very clear today, that the city staff continues to do a very competent and qualified job on all of these fronts, despite diminishing resources and some, you know, meddlesome at best interference by just a handful of people. Anyway, we're done with the consent agenda with this vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thanks for your patience.
Yeah, that was from the last city council meeting in June. That was Mayor Scott Kennedy, the author of the downtown ordinances, or I should say a supporter of them, as well as of the sleeping ban, the camping ban, all the other anti-homeless paraphernalia, as well as the co-founder of the Resource Center for Nonviolence, which, as you may have heard, if you've been on the air, if you've been listening to this station, we've been on the air, but listening to us on the air, the info shop has been given a 30-day get your shit out of here notice by Resource Center for Nonviolence property manager Bob Fitch. And I've been trying to get the Indie Media website to come up to get the latest update on that from them, and I'm still having trouble doing it. Don't see a lot that's new, actually. I'm hoping to get some response from Joe King. Joe is the leasee, the man who kind of did the lease for, who came forward as representative of the info shop to the Resource Center and was informed abruptly by Fitch that they had to get out in a month without any kind of written list of concerns. At least no such written list was ever shown to the info shop collective, according to the testimony of three or four people. Fitch has declared he has such a list, or either in his mind or on paper, and that he will reveal that at some later time, perhaps when this is all over. At least that's how the scuttlebutt goes. So who knows? Maybe we'll know all about this after the info shop and its books and resources and computers are all on the sidewalk, and we can all feel better about it. My inclination is to set up a table in front of the Resource Center for Nonviolence and start petitioning and informing the community that here's a group of people that doesn't like activists, although they are getting money under the pretense of being activists. Of course, the key here is they're not local activists. They are exploiting the local feeling for justice, the need for justice and peace, but they are supporting oppression in many respects locally in terms of how they treat their own tenants, how they treat activists that they rent to, how they treat injustice in their own city. That's another issue having to do with how homeless people are treated in Santa Cruz, how the police department operates, and the continuing silence of the Resource Center on such things as the laws that make it illegal to have a table for more than an hour downtown, the truncation of the First Amendment that is going on not through the Patriot Act at the national level, but locally through the city council. And it's important for people to know about this and talk about this and address this, and it's important for the Resource Center to address this, because while I am, in fact, criticizing them here, I have also spoken praising some of the things they have done. You know, the draft counseling that Bob Fitch does, I have personally seen to be of use. I've seen, he's helped people I know. I mean, I don't mean to slight the positive things the Resource Center does, but their silence on this is your standard landlord stonewalling. We have the power, so we don't have to say a word to you. We have the power, so get the fuck out. Get your own attorney. We've got our attorney already lined up. You know, I mean, it's despicable, especially when it comes from someone who claims to have progressive credentials. So hopefully we'll learn more about that. If you know or have more information about that, give a call at the Huff line to 423-HUFF, or you can tune in on the next show or call in and speak on the air on the subject. And we come back on Thursday, 6 to 8 on Thursday evening. That's the next scheduled Bathroom Spears Broadsides show. Bathroom Spears Broadsides has gotten, I've gotten word that someone has written a program to record Bathroom Spears Broadsides off the internet, and we may soon be doing that automatically and posting it either on the Huff website or on another website. So if you miss Bathroom Spears Broadsides, you may be able to hear it at a later time. Think of that, folks. So you should also, you know, be alert to the fact that there is a website you can tune into and get more information about civil rights in Santa Cruz for the poor. That's the Huff website, www.huffsantacruz.org. Check that out. We're going to be having an increasing discussion of the city council races. Some Huff members are considering running locally on this issue. Tried to raise the issue last time. Nobody seemed to want to talk about it, but maybe more people will in the future. As I said, there is a city council meeting on Tuesday at 2 o'clock concerning the tannery and the art space there, and then build the parking lot and the hotel development. I think they sunk, I don't know, was it $20 million, $30 million of city money into the hotel development, the city council did. It's interesting how Kennedy, whines about the city attorneys, the wasting of time of the city attorney by some frivolous members of the public, how somehow we're wasting their time and money because they're choosing to go after us for engaging in ordinary free speech activity, which had previously been the norm in Santa Cruz. No one had ever been prosecuted for chalking on the sidewalk prior to the year 2000 that I've heard about. And no new law appeared except there was a new judicial interpretation of the vandalism statute, which lets them screw around, but eventually they've dropped all charges of vandalism that they were considering applying to those of us who write things like end the war in Iraq and erasable sidewalk chalk on the sidewalk. And we also have water nearby, so it can be washed off or worn off, which is the usual way such messages disappear. One of Rodkin's comments I wanted to reply to, he said that he didn't whine when he went to jail in a public protest because the purpose was to raise public awareness, maybe to challenge the law in court. Well, it's important not only to whine, but to shout, scream, and otherwise amplify your protest when what's happening when you're being arrested is the First Amendment is being eliminated, because that's what's happening when people are arrested for drawing a peace sign in erasable chalk on the sidewalk. It is simply not defacing the sidewalk. It is being used that way. And since the courts are very cooperative with city council officials and with the city administration, they can do pretty much what they want at the local level until we get up to the federal courts. And even there, of course, things are getting bad. But that doesn't mean the First Amendment isn't being destroyed here, and it doesn't mean we shouldn't shout as loud as we can about that issue. And for Rodkin to call it whining shows exactly what he thinks of the First Amendment as it applies to his jurisdiction. He's a great defender of the First Amendment against the Patriot Act. He's on the American Civil Liberties Union's board of directors. He spoke about it 2 months ago. I heard him. But it's utter hypocrisy for him to be doing that kind of thing when locally he is supporting repression, as he has historically done. He's tried to have people arrested at city council for making comments and protests that he doesn't like, even though they were not disruptive of the city council in any real way. And no one was ever convicted of such a thing after his arrests or his urgings to arrest. He has tried to close down City Hall at night to protests. The judges, and then on that occasion, struck him down, but they did give him the right to arrest someone for one instance of sleeping at City Hall and have to go to jail for up to 6 months. That was Rodkin's doing in the spring and summer of 1996. He has a history of this kind of stuff. And he's a very amiable guy. You know, he has a perfect public persona for believing that here's this really nice, friendly fellow who really wants to work everything out. He's utterly reasonable. But unfortunately, his record shows a different thing. He's not running for city council this year. Kennedy is. And he's the man, of course, that I'm going to be focusing on because he's not only running, he's not only a three-time recycled candidate, but he's also the mayor. And he's also a major hypocrite around these issues, as many of these progressives are, but him particularly as the co-founder of the Resource Center for Nonviolence. Although, I guess, now as we learn about the Resource Center for Nonviolence, it's apparently the Resource Center for Non-Activism, too. If you want to join in with that, they'll rent you a place if you'll keep a low profile, stay quiet, and don't have numbers of people there trying to use the space, even if you're using it respectfully and you're using it in terms in concordance with the lease. The people at the info shop were never accused of violating their lease. They were always, the only thing they were told was they would have to leave because it's the absolute power of the landlord once the month is up to say go, and that's what's going on. So join me again next Thursday. We'll talk more, or you can come to the Huff meeting on Wednesday at 8:30 in the morning at Baker Square, 1107 Ocean. Oh boy, what a familiar place. Coffee for you if you can't afford it. And give me a call between times at 423-4833, and we'll talk off air about other stuff. I can't answer that phone directly, but I will call you back. And that's about it. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. And a tip of the hat to Dangerous John T. for being with me, too.
What's gotten into our men in blue that's making them overreact? Is there something about wearing that badge that they do that makes them just want to attack? Or could it be rookies who prove overzealous? Perhaps we should ask, why this rough stuff now, fellas? We're hopped up cops at the donut shops, drinking hot coffee and soda pops, watching for motorists running stops so we can go practice karate chops. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine, if we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean, it's the LAPD theme. Against the car, did you hear what I said? Hands in the air or I'll smash your head. You better get on the ground or you'll wind up dead. You're gonna be sorry you ever sped. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine, if we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean, it's the LAPD theme. You can bet your bottom dollar on the donuts I've eaten that your black butt is gonna get a beating. So go ahead, sue, if you think we're mistreating, and we'll take it up at the next Klan meeting. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine, if we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean, it's the LAPD theme. Against the car, did you hear what I said? Hands in the air or I'll smash your head. You better get on the ground or you'll wind up dead. You're gonna be sorry you ever sped. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine, if we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean, it's the LAPD theme. Your step, you criminal slime, cause we're on the prowl, getting tough on crime. Get your cameras ready, get your lights online, cause we're all pumped up for prime time. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine, if we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean, it's the LAPD theme. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine, if we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean, it's the LAPD theme. It's the LAPD theme. It's the LAPD theme.